Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. It's time for Twit's annual audience survey, and we want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes, and your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. We thank you so much for your continued support. twit.tv/survey. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, March 21st, 2015. This is episode 1171. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you get award-winning financial tools, unbiased advice, and a transparent view of all your investments. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/techguy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes, it's time for the Tech Guy Show. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. More importantly, remember, if you have to remember one thing, the website, techguylabs.com. That's where we put all the show notes, where phone numbers there, the chat rooms there, everything you need to know about me, the Tech Guy, including my shoe size and shirt size, in case you want to buy me gifts at Tech Guy. No, I'm just kidding. Although that's not a bad idea, is it? Maybe it's just like I have a Tech Guy wish list. You see people do that, don't you? On Amazon.com, they'll have a wish list, like of things you could get them if you were so inclined. No, don't get me anything. I even tell my family, don't get me anything. I got everything I want. I am the happiest man in the world because I'm the Tech Guy. I started writing for computer magazines in the late 70s. Oy, oy, oy. Because games and hardware for my Atari computer, my Atari 800 computer, were so expensive. And then somebody said, you know, if you wrote a review for Byte Magazine, you could keep the software. I said, really? And they'll pay you $50. I said, really? And that's at that point, that's when I got hooked, talking about technology, writing about it, and later broadcasting about it. And mostly just, you know, support my habit. It's worked out pretty well. Actually, maybe too well. Because now I'm at the point where, oh, no, not another phone. I don't want another phone. So I have to buy a new computer. Oh, man. Another one. So maybe it's worked a little too well. You know what I'm interested in, though, is drones. Have you played with these yet? I remember it was 2 or 3 years ago. At CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. Oh, that's playland for geeks, let me tell you. A company I'd never heard of, Parrot AR. What are they, Dutch? They're French, I think. Yeah. They had a little thing out in the parking lot. It wasn't even inside the show hall. They had reserved some space in a parking lot, and they were out there, and I saw a lot of people gathered around. I wandered over. What is going on over here? And there were these things. It was so cool. They were like remote control planes, but they were helicopters. And they didn't have one rotor. They had four. They were, as we have later learned, quadcopters. And they were using an iPhone to control them. And it was very, very interesting because remote control. If you're not a hobbyist, you don't do this all the time. It's hard. It is difficult to fly a plane. It's really, you see people on YouTube videos and doing acrobatics and stuff. That is a skill, high level skill involved in that. But these drones were, you didn't really need to know much. They auto-stabilized. They could hover. If you didn't do anything, they just sit there floating. I don't know when they became drones. They're not really drones. They're quadcopters. They're just like any RC remote control aircraft. They're not really drones. Well, maybe they are with one. Maybe what makes them a drone is the fact that some of them, a lot of them, have cameras, so you could see where you're going. In fact, I've seen people now wear helmets where you actually are on the drone. Anyway, Parrot AR came out with these. I was very impressed. They were expensive, but they were neat. But they were still early days. Better and better. The years went by. DJI started making these amazing Phantom drones. We got one for the studio because you could mount a GoPro camera on there and get really great footage. And the thing that makes them so good for that is they can hover. They're a very stable platform that just floats and slowly moves. Or you could hover it and pan the camera. Some of them have pan, tilt, zoom. Very impressive. But I watched from afar because I am kind of a klutz. And I've watched this get, you know, become a big story. FAA's ruled. Remember the guy flew a drone into the White House grounds? Major League Baseball was very concerned during the playoffs that somebody might use a drone to dive bomb the stadium during a ball game. So they had all sorts of, you know, ways to try to prevent that. It turned out to be very expensive and ineffective, so they abandoned it for the World Series. But drones are in the news. The FAA has even proposed some rules about drones. It's illegal to fly them for commercial purposes. If you're a non-commercial pilot, you have to keep it within sight at all times and not fly over people and all of these things. But I stayed away from them because I found them, being a klutz, difficult. Well, we have a friend, a guy, a colleague who works here, Robert Ballasaire, who's a drone fanatic. I think he's probably an RC fanatic, and he loves the drones. So he's really into this. So he said, Leo, you got to try it. I said, I don't know, Robert. He said, look, here's what you do. You go out and you get a SYMA, S-Y-M-A, and you can get these on Amazon for about $40. He said, they're junky. Don't get the one with the camera. It's a terrible camera. But you're going to get the $40 drone for a couple of reasons. One, because it's light. So if you screw up, which you will, and fly into something or worse, somebody, you won't hurt them. Okay. Or if it drops out of the sky, you know, the battery only goes for 7 minutes or something. If it drops, falls from the sky and hits somebody in the head, it won't hurt them. It might surprise them. I said, okay. I'm getting more and more nervous. And he says, and if you lose it, it's $40. It's not, you know, $400 or more. So I got a $40 SYMA drone. This was about a month ago, 3 weeks ago. And, I'm very excited. I charged up the battery. You plug it into a USB cable, you know, and you charge up the battery. Put the batteries in the remote control. I'm excited. Now, even Robert said, you know, you should do this inside first. I said, I'm not going to do this inside. I'll break something. So I went outside. I turn on the drone. Just sits there. Lights blink. Okay. Now, the remote control, I turn it on. I push the joystick forward just a little bit. The drone goes, starts to rise. Oh, this is cool. Continues to rise. Wait a minute. Push back on the joystick. Continues to go up. It's like a helium balloon. It goes straight up, out of control, until I can't see it anymore. I never found that drone. I have no... I sincerely hope it didn't hurt anybody. I was in the backyard in the countryside. I don't think it would have hit anybody, but I have no idea where it went. To the moon, as far as I could tell, straight up. I'm glad it was only $40, but that was a terrible first experience. Well, there's a new drone that came out from the Parrot AR folks. Not cheap, $500. But Robert, my pusher, my drone pusher, says, oh, no, anyone can fly this one, Leo. This one's smarter. It has GPS. You could press a button, emergency button. It'll bring it home and land where it took off from. You can't get into trouble with this. So I bought this. This is the Parrot Bebop. Maybe you heard me talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago. He said it's available. I said, I'm getting it. The Bebop drone, $500. If you want, they have, if you're a remote control guy, I'm not, but if you are a remote control guy and you want to use this as far as a mile and a half away, which I think is illegal, but anyway, you can buy for another $400 this thing that you put your iPad in and it becomes this, and it's got a hood and very elaborate. No, I didn't lose it. I know what you're thinking. I didn't lose it. I got it a few days ago. I immediately crashed it. The first time I flew it, I just pressed one button and it just goes up 4 feet and sits there. That worked perfectly. And there's a camera, and you can see on your iPad or your iPhone, you can see it's looking at you. You can see what you look like from the drone. That's cool. You can, and the Parrot AR Bebop, which is really neat, has a fixed camera. You can't pan, tilt, and zoom, except it's such a wide, it's like a fisheye, so it sees everything. And then they use software to correct it so you can pan, tilt, and zoom. So you can look around. The camera doesn't move, but your view does, and it's on the iPad. Cool. So then there's another button that makes it go higher. So make it go higher. There's another button that flies it. But what I didn't know is that the Parrot doesn't know where the ground is. It's high, but I flew it right to the hillside. Anybody want to buy a slightly used Parrot Bebop drone? They are fun, I have to admit. Hey, we're going to take a break. Come back. Take your calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, not so much the Parrot drone guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones. Heather Hammond has loaded us up with some great callers. Let's go to our first caller of the day, Marcia, in Huntington Beach, California. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
All right. Well, here's my question. I can't figure out how to. I work in Outlook 2010, and I'd like to be able to sync the Outlook and the calendar to my Galaxy S3. And I'm not figuring out how to do that.
No.
Do I have to go through like Outlook.com and go up to the cloud, or
yeah, because your Android device generally wants to sync with Google.
Yeah, and I actually do get my Gmail on the phone, and I actually push my Outlook email to Yahoo, and I get my Yahoo mail.
And
on
you
the
can
phone
do that, right? but
I really like the calendar.
Yeah, you got to get the address book in the calendar. That's going to save you a lot of time. Used to be that Google offered a sync program that was designed to, you know, kind of keep your Outlook in sync with Google Calendar and Google Contacts. They stopped doing that. I think if you have the paid Google Apps, you can still do that with Google Apps Sync. But I think now you have to get a third-party program. And there are quite a few alternatives to the no longer available Google version. There's one called Sync2.com. The idea is you're going to run something on your Windows computer that will periodically get new stuff from Outlook, send it up to Google, get new stuff from Google, bring it down into Outlook. Synchronize them, in other words. Keep them in sync.
Okay.
It's a shame. I'm not sure why Google stopped doing that, but there are plenty of other companies that are doing it. Slipstick.com is another one. And Alex, who's our Windows guru, says, what do you use? Companion Link. Okay. So these are all programs you'll have to buy. They're not expensive. They're under $50. Companion Link is the one he uses. You'll download them, install them on your Windows machine, and it just runs in the background all the time.
Okay.
That's the way to do it. Yep.
All right. And thanks, Leo.
Yeah, you're welcome. I appreciate it. I wish there were a better answer, frankly, to that, but there isn't.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying and not able to figure it out, but I will check out these programs.
You can try Companion Link free for 2 weeks. That should be enough time to see if it works for you. And right. I don't know how much it costs, but they can't possibly be very expensive. Yeah, $50.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Moving on to Tim in La Placenta, California. Placentia. Hello, Tim.
Oh, yes, La Crescenta.
Oh, La Crescenta. All right.
La Crescenta, a word that does not exist.
Really? That's not a Spanish word?
It's not a Spanish word. A bunch of gringos just made it up.
It sounds good. Oh, it's one of them real estate words. Yeah.
It's a valley that looks like a crescent.
Ah, yeah, perfect.
They just made it up and it is not a Spanish word. It's not an English word.
But it sounds good.
Yeah, it is, and it's a wonderful place to live.
Oh, good. All right.
So I have a very low-tech question.
Oh, I love those.
And it is, I am going to be replacing a TV, and it's a real small, probably 40-inch TV, and I'm a photographer, so I'm a real nerd for certain things.
Mm.
And I want to find out if the Sony Bravia is worth the extra money.
No. Sony used to be the brand name, you know, the remember the Grand Vegas?
Yes.
Yeah, those were the TV, the best color reproduction, but that's what those were tube TVs. In fact, I saw a 40-inch Grand Vega on the sidewalk free the other day.
Now you have an idea how old I am.
Free! The Bravias are good, they're fine, but if they cost a lot more than, let's say, a Samsung or a Panasonic or a Vizio, then it's not worth it. They're not that much better.
Is there a favorite that you have in the 40-inch range?
First of all, I'd go bigger. So 40 inches was a big TV in the tube TV days. That's because the diagonal was 40 inches and it was 48 inches deep. Those tubes were huge.
Right.
Now with flat panel, there's no depth at all to these TVs. And frankly, you want a bigger screen if you can fit it. You may be limited by your cupboard or your hutch or your cabinet.
It's kind of the room that it fits in and the cabinet, and that's why we're kind of, I mean, we have like about a 30-inch now, and so a 40-inch is, even on the different format, is going to look huge.
Well, you can see when you shop for TVs, even if you shop online, actually especially if you shop online, you'll be able to see what the width dimension of the TV is. That'll be less than the diagonal, obviously.
Right.
So 40 inches is diagonal, but then the width is like 35 or 36. If you can only get 40, you're going to get 40, but it's most people start with a bigger TV, frankly. Nowadays with HD TV, bigger is more realistic, 50, 55, 60, even 70 inches. But again, if it doesn't work, and this is really, it's funny because all of those cabinets were built for littler TVs. 40 inches is a giant tube TV.
Right.
I don't even know if they made bigger than that. But it's right. Believe it or not, it's small. And by the way, the good news on that is it'll be inexpensive. We just bought from my in-laws. Their old tube TV died. We got a Samsung, I think it's a 42-inch for $300. They're nothing.
Yes, that's the range that we're looking at. And yeah. I do want to see if I can sneak one other question in.
So I like Samsung. I think Samsung makes excellent ones.
Great.
Yeah, and you're going to be getting an LED backlit LCD. What you're going to look for, if you can, but since you're a photographer and your visual acuity is important and color accuracy important, an LED that is not edge backlit but is backlit throughout the expanse of the LED. So
okay.
Sometimes they have I can't remember the names for those. Is it micro dimming? I can't remember. I'm looking at a website called The Wire Cutter, which is a great place to learn about stuff, and they actually like, for the best small TV, a Vizio, the E320B2.
Okay,
that's pretty small. That's a 32-inch.
What my sister is really into Vizios.
Vizios, normally we've always thought of them as kind of the second tier brand beneath Sony, beneath Panasonic and Samsung and LG, but I think they've really come on strong and they're quite good. The software in them is quite good. Yeah, this 32-inch is $271. They do make in this model a 40-inch for $369. I think it'd be a very good choice as well. That's the E400. As you might gather, the number is the size. And they even make a 42-inch of this model, $420.
Does kicking up to a smart TV, is that a good investment?
You're not going to have much choice. Almost all of them are smart now.
Okay,
you don't need the smart if you have a Roku or an Apple TV, if you have an external smart box, and I often recommend that instead of the smart built into the TV. But Vizios are not bad.
Okay.
LG is very good. Samsung is very good. You're going to want to get a full array LED backlight. That means there's LEDs behind all of it. The Vizio does do that. That's going to give you the best, most even lighting. Blacks will be blackest. Contrast will be best.
That's what I look for.
Of course you do. You're a photographer, right?
Yeah.
Now, the plasmas used to be much better, but they don't make them anymore, so that's unfortunate. There are OLED screens, but they're very, very pricey. They give you better reproduction. But I think Vizio, LG, Samsung, and I think maybe this Vizio might be the best choice, frankly, at that size.
Super. Super. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure. Yeah, it's hard not to get a smart TV now. And really all that means is they've got internet built in, usually Wi-Fi as well as Ethernet, so they can get online. And then they have software. You can use the remote control to go to Netflix or other sources for internet television. You know, if you don't have something else, I think that's not a bad way to go. But I think there are better choices out there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, as always, this time of day. It's our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson from the AVS Forum, avsforum.com, and our Home Theater Geeks podcast, twit.tv/HTG. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How's everything going in Scotland?
Just fine. Thank you very much. Having a wonderful time. I get plenty of emailed questions about various things, so I thought I'd answer a couple today.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
Sure. I got one from Mark Miller, who has a Lexicon MC12, which is a preamp processor, very high-end, very good, and two ADCOM amplifiers. Okay, so he went the separates route. Most of us have AV receivers, which combine the amp power amplifier with the preamp processing functions. He's got them separated out. The problem is the MC12, the Lexicon Pre-Pro, does not have HDMI. And, of course, these days, you really want to connect everything with HDMI. It's much simpler. It conveys the latest and greatest formats and so on. So he was thinking of upgrading to something less expensive, which that's good. You can spend less and get more these days. And he was thinking about the Marantz AV7005, which is a very good pre-pro, well-priced as well. I don't remember the exact price. It's probably under $2,000. The Lexicon is way more than that. So he asks, is this a good choice? And my answer is yes, absolutely. And then he wants to keep the equipment he has. And he says, if the answer is yes, can you advise me how to connect the Marantz AV7005 to the Lexicon MC12? And my answer is, well, you don't. You sell the Lexicon because you don't need it anymore.
Let me ask you this. There's a lot of subjectivity in better, worse. I mean, I don't.
True.
What would make one amp that costs, let's say, twice as much better than an amp that costs half as much? What would be the difference? You say this, well, this Lexicon is super good. What makes it's not tubes, right? It's all solid state now.
It's all solid state, and we're talking pre-pros here, preamp processors, not amplifiers.
But it would be apply to any solid state audio circuitry.
Any solid state device.
What
makes
that pre-pro? First of all, why do I need a pre-pro? And second, what makes that? How much is it? Well, you figure it's like it's $1,000.
The Marantz, I think, is under two. I have to
under
look it up.
Under $2,000.
Under $2,000.
And so that means now, the Lexicon's a lot more.
A lot more. Yes.
Am I going to hear? Who's going to hear the difference?
Well, there you go. That's the real question, isn't it? It is a subjective evaluation, partly.
I understand if one has like more buttons or
or features or whatever. The Lexicon
HDMI ports or something.
The Lexicon doesn't have any HDMI. What it does have is stellar sound quality in terms of objective measurements such as distortion.
So you can measure that on equipment.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I recently had a guest on my podcast, Lori Fincham from THX, who designed a new power amplifier that's being made by a company called Benchmark. And he designed it in such a way that the distortion is so low, you know, it's 0.00000. There's a ton of zeros before you get to any numbers in terms of the distortion, which is vanishingly low. So that's obviously one thing that you really want. And it's one thing that distinguishes a solid state amplifiers, preamps, circuitry in general, from tube amps, which we've talked about before. Some people really like them, but we can't call them accurate. They do have distortion. They happen to have a type of distortion that many people really like.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, I remember, like, Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones, he was trying to get distortion. Jimi Hendrix was trying to get.
Exactly.
Sometimes distortion's not a bad thing, but I guess you probably want with the reproductive equipment, so to speak. The audio reproduction, you want that to interfere as little as possible with the source material. You kind of want it to get out of the way.
you want it to be transparent.
Yeah.
Because you want the content creator's intent to come through unscathed.
Right. Now, so I understand that. But what are we talking here? 0.0001 versus 0.0000001?
Yeah. we're often talking in those kinds of ranges.
And you go,
can you hear that difference? Well, you know, you'd have to conduct double blind tests and blah, blah, blah. Yes, maybe some people who are trained, and this is another issue, is trained listeners versus untrained listeners. Harman spends a lot of time training listeners to go in and do double-blind tests, mostly of speakers, to see if they can hear a difference. And if they can, and they're trained so that you know that they know that a certain frequency range sounds like this or some distortion here sounds like that, then you know, they can rely on their evaluation, their blind subjective evaluation, to say, oh, okay, well, then we need to modify the speaker in this way or that way.
Right.
So, you know, it's a very subjective thing. The difference in price could also be features. The Lexicon might have a very good room correction algorithm, that the Marantz might have a less good room correction algorithm. There are many different factors that go into it. But I think that Mark here is right to want to upgrade the Lexicon because it doesn't have HDMI. And as we know,
functionality is something I can measure. I can see.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And this is a functional difference that really makes an important difference. So his main question, though, can you advise me how to connect the Marantz to the Lexicon? And the answer is you don't.
Right. You don't. That's what you want, you buy a cheap HDMI converter box or something instead of the Marantz.
An HDMI switcher. That would be another option. You're exactly right.
Hey, let me ask you this then. What is the most important component? I mean, you could have the Lexicon, but if your speakers aren't great...
Uh-huh, that's right.
That's much more important. Is the speaker, is that the most important part?
Boy, you know, that is a question that gets asked a lot, and it's really hard to answer. Because you might have a really good... I think my answer to that question basically is the total quality of your entire system is no better than the worst piece of equipment.
Well, that makes sense. Right.
So if you have a really hot preamp processor and a really great amplifier, but kind of funky, lousy speakers, then all those great attributes of the electronics are going to be wasted. You're not going to hear them because the speaker is going to mask them with all of its problems. So you have to find a balance. You have to see what is your budget. Okay, it's so many thousands of dollars, whatever. Okay, now how am I going to spread that across the electronics, the speakers, the source device, so that I get the best possible performance and not one of them, there isn't one of them that's significantly worse than the others that will rob me of the enjoyment of those others.
You know, one of the reasons I'm interested in this is because I've been just reviewing this little, it looks like an iPod, doesn't it? It's the FIO, F-I-I-O X1. It's a portable audio player.
High-res?
Yes. Mm. And so it plays back pretty much any kind of digital recording, including these magic high-res FLAC recordings as high as 192 kilohertz by 24 bits. And that's as high as you can get. This would play back an audio master, a digital recording audio master.
Yep.
And it's $100. Yeah, I know.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Like,
that's amazing.
So like the Pono player, that's Neil Young's thing, is $400.
Right. $400.
Now, it doesn't come with memory, but in a way that's nice because you can buy little micro SD cards and buy as many as you want. This could be your classical music collection. This could be your rock.
Right,
put them in. But I put 128 gigs in here. That's a lot of storage for $100. So for $200 plus whatever you spend on your headphones, which is going to probably be a lot more than that.
That's another question.
Yeah. But now at $100, this isn't going to have the best possible digital to audio, digital analog audio converter. It's not going to have best possible headphone amps.
Yep.
What does that mean? Is it going to sound worse?
Well, that's the big question: is where did they put their money?
Yeah, we're out of time, so we'll table that for another day. Hey, okay. Scott, I liked it and recommended it.
Good.
Scott Wilkinson, AVSForum.com, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. And our next call is Pete in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Pete.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, sir. Good. I have a question. All right, and to be honest, I found an iPhone 6.
Okay.
And it was locked. I can't tell who it belongs to. Is there any way I could either track it down, like track who owns it?
Oh, you just found it on the street?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, is it locked? If you turn it on, is it locked?
Yes, it's past it. And somebody took out the SIM card, too.
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell if it was AT&T.
Yeah.
Verizon.
That you might be able to tell. AT&T and Verizon, I think, print labels on theirs. If it's locked, there's not much you can do. You could be a good Samaritan, I guess, and turn it into Apple. They may, or the cops, somebody may have filed a report. Although I suspect in a big city like Brooklyn, you file a lost phone report with the police, they're not going to probably pay much attention.
Yeah, they won't do too much.
They're not going to write down the number except to maybe put it on a post-it note and throw it away after you leave. If Siri is turned on, you might be able to interact with it. You know, Siri can be turned on even when the screen is locked. So press the button and, you know, tap the home button and see if Siri will come on. In fact, the chat room, Scooter X in the chat room, has found an article from 9 to 5 Mac, how to use Siri to return a lost iPhone. So you can literally ask Siri, who owns this phone? So try that. Now, normally, I turn off Siri when the phone is locked because Siri lets you dial with an unlocked phone and do things like who owns this phone. You can do a lot with Siri even if the phone is locked. But I bet you know, most people don't. So tap and hold the home button, activate Siri, she'll go boom, boop. And then you'll say, who owns this phone or whose phone is this or who does this iPhone belong to? And Siri then, if there's an owner set for it, will say. How about that? Isn't that cool? Thank you, Scooter X, for that fascinating tidbit. Now, if they've disabled Siri during the lock screen, I don't think there's probably anything you can do. I'm guessing that Pete's the subtext of Pete's question is, I hope I can't find out who owns this phone because then I can keep it. That would be my guess. So try that. And if you can't and it's still locked and Siri doesn't respond, you know, I guess you could call the police and say, I have a lost phone. Of course, they may just say, great, bring it in. We'll take it. So maybe ask Apple. And sometimes people report it to Apple. I think if you do these few things, then you're ethically allowed to wipe the phone and start over and make it yours. You may not be able to. Because of kill switches now, Apple, I think, makes it impossible to do that without the actual password of the owner. So it may not be useful anyway. Gail is in Canyon Lake, Texas. Hi, Gail. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Been listening to you for years and years and years.
Well, I'm glad. Welcome.
Well, I hope you can help me with my Note 4.
Oh, I hope so, too. I have one. I love it.
I love it, too. I upgraded from my Galaxy S4, and when I had my S4, I bought a Jawbone portable speaker, Bluetooth.
Yeah.
And the iHome speaker as well.
Okay.
And they worked great with the S4, but now with this Note 4, I can't seem to get them to find each other.
You know, sometimes... I've been able to, with the Jawbone, I've been able to match multiple phones. But sometimes if you've got a lot of paired devices, there's a limit to the number you can have. You might, if you're not using that phone, the old phone anymore, you might just look on the Jawbone site for how to reset or repair. Sometimes you can clear the Bluetooth memory and start over.
On the Jawbone?
Yeah, well, on any Bluetooth device, there's usually a reset capability that will allow you to clear out all the Bluetooth pairings and start over as if the speaker just came from the factory.
Oh, I see.
Have you paired it with multiple devices?
No, just with the S4, but I do see on the back of the iHome speaker that there is a little reset
Yeah.
Pole.
So try that.
Okay.
Try that. Okay. And you know how to pair, right? You know what the buttons are to press and hold and all that.
I do, yes.
The nice thing about the Jawbone speakers is they talk to you.
Yep.
So you know when they're in pairing mode, and when they paired, it'll say, I have just paired with Gale's S4 or whatever.
Yep.
So then you'll know what they're paired with. You should, you know, if you're following the right procedure and it doesn't pair, the only thing I could think of is maybe it's full. Have you paired the Note 4 with any other Bluetooth devices?
I have not yet. Just the speakers I've tried. You know, in my car, I use the cassette.
Okay.
You know.
So I would, you know, it could be that your Bluetooth's turned off or it's not non-functioning.
Well, I'm thinking you're probably correct on the. I didn't realize about the little reset thing.
Yeah, try resetting it. Then it's fresh, and then that might eliminate. I have my Note 4 paired with, goodness knows, my car. Two Bose speakers, a couple of laptops, another car, a Moto watch, a Moto earbuds, a TV. I've got to pair with a lot of stuff. So the phone doesn't have many limits. It can pair with a lot of things. But if you've never paired it before, then I'm wondering if maybe Bluetooth's not turned on, or if it is turned on, you want to make the check the box that makes the Note 4
right.
visible, and then press the scan button. You shouldn't have to do both, but I do both, and then make sure your Jawbone is in the right your Jambox is in the pairing situation. You know, the light's blinking blue, and if it doesn't pair, I'm not sure. Then at that point, it may be that since you've never paired your phone, it maybe there's issues with its Bluetooth. But let's assume not. Let's try resetting
I'll do the reset first.
Reset the Jambox in the iHome. See what happens. Yep.
Okay. Well, great.
Yeah, and restart your phone too. Always a good idea to do that, just in case.
Yep. Yes, sir.
All right, Gail. Thanks for listening for so long. All right.
Bye.
Take care. Bye bye. Ed, somewhere between Phoenix and California.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Mr. LaForte.
Good afternoon. Are you on a long drive? I guess.
Yeah, I've been driving for about 7.5 hours,
sir. Holy cow. Coming back from spring training?
No, coming back from seeing my grandchildren a robotics demonstration to the superintendent at the elementary school for third graders.
Aren't you a great grandpa?
And I support the thing, but that's not why I called, but that is going to lead up to it.
That's very cool.
My question is that I am... really a person through all these years have been against electronics, computers, and so forth because I don't have to put a gun to your head to steal things. Now they could be stolen over the Internet. But since the way of our world has gone this way, I retired at 50. I'm 58 now. I can foresee that my future is going to have to be connected with the Internet no matter what, because all the other means of communication are going to disappear, and our banking system will more than likely disappear, and it will all be Internet activated and operated.
Absolutely.
That's the way.
It's the future.
That's the way that we will create a one-world currency.
Well, I don't know about that, but...
That's just a guess.
I don't know if that... In fact, I think it's the opposite, but go ahead.
Neither here nor there. What I'm looking for, and I was just at the Verizon store, they had an LG tablet. And I don't do any I have no plans to do any business, no money transaction, no banking, no anything on.
So here, let me give you some tips. First of all, that tablet's fine, but because you're buying it from Verizon, you're also buying a monthly fee for data. Now, I presume you don't have Internet at home, so you're going to have to
negative
do that.
-0.
Yeah, so you're going to have to do that in some form or fashion. So that's not a bad way to go. Sometimes people prefer having a physical keyboard. You know, tablets, you're tapping on the glass. And that it's not good for emails for too long. You don't want to do too much of that.
I don't do emails.
Well, you will.
I don't even know anybody.
Trust me, you will. Your grandkids, if nothing else. That's one of the most important things you do on the Internet. Really, basically, the things you're going to do, most likely going to do with your computer, at least initially, are surf the Internet and send and receive email. Now, you may not start doing that, but you will. The LG tablet's not a bad way to go at all. I think that's fine. How much is it?
Here's the amazing thing. LG tablet, $135.
Yeah, we're out of time. So I'm going to say go for it. I think that's a great choice. You might also consider a Chromebook. Verizon also sells those, but that sounds great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, hey, hey. Hour two of the Tech Guy Show. Taking your calls, answering your questions, talking high tech as we do every week. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. You're driving along, you're hearing the show, and you say, oh, that's something I want to see or try, or, I've been looking for that. Don't have to write it down. Please don't. Please don't. Everything is on the website, techguylabs.com. We write it down so you don't have to. And by the way, no sign up. It's free, no charge. It's just there. It's a resource. There's, in fact, audio and video from previous shows. Everything's all up there. techguylabs.com. Of course, Apple had a big event a couple of weeks ago. They announced the watch, a lot of attention on the watch, less attention on their new notebook. Although it's really interesting, as angry as some people are about the watch, and the people are really angry. Oh, that $17,000, you'd have to be insane. I would never buy that. Anybody who buys that's an idiot. Stuff like that. They're angry at Apple for releasing the Apple Watch. I mean, maybe it's not a good product. I don't know. We won't know till the 24th, April 24th, when we get our hands on one. But I'm willing to reserve judgment. Well, as angry as people were about the watch, some of them are even more angry about the new notebook computer Apple announced, the MacBook. Just the MacBook. It's not the MacBook Air, MacBook Pro. Just the MacBook. And this is where, I have to say, this is where I really admire Apple. Whether this is a great computer or not, and there are, I'll tell you the pros and cons, but whether it's a great computer or not, you have to admire Apple's willingness to take a chance to innovate. It's very easy, as most of the industry does, just copy what's been successful. Apple innovated with the MacBook Air. Remember, it was very thin, very light, didn't have any drives. People thought, I don't know, no drives? Do you really want a computer without a CD-ROM or a DVD? What? And, of course, it was a huge success. Everybody wanted a MacBook Air. And what happened? Well, the industry copied it. Intel, quote, reinvented it with something they called the Ultrabook. And everybody made it. And it's clearly a MacBook Air clone. And you can't blame them. Look, something works. People like it. You should make one and make it run Windows. So the Ultrabooks were very, very popular. I'll be curious to see if the PC industry does this with the MacBook. It's again, another case of Apple saying, look, let's try something new. We think people will want this. We're going to take a chance. And, of course, if they're right, you'll see a million of them. So what's different about the MacBook? And don't get me wrong, because I know I'll get a lot of email. People say, oh, no, Asus has done this 6 months ago. They released something very similar. I know. But I'll tell you what Apple's done that's different and unusual, and you can be the judge. So the MacBook is very, very thin and light. 13 millimeters. That's, you know, nothing. Not the thinnest computer, laptop out there, but pretty close. It's about twice the thickness of your iPhone, a little less. It's also 2 pounds, and I think that might make it the lightest notebook out there. There aren't many that are that light. The Asus that everybody talks about is 2.6 pounds, so 2 pounds, pretty light. It's got a very good 12-inch screen. It's not 11 inches. That's the smallest Apple makes. It's not the 13-inch. That's the next one up. It's right in between, 12 inches. I find that intriguing. I think that might be, we'll see, it might be the Goldilocks size, just right. Not too big, not too little, just right. It's also a high-res screen. It's Apple's calling it a Retina display, and at 277 dots per inch, that qualifies. I'm sure it's a gorgeous display. Apple's very good at this. They had to reinvent some stuff in order for this to work. They couldn't have a normal keyboard because it's too thin. So they make a lot of noise about how well we've reinvented the keyboard. Apple loves. They're great at marketing. We've reinvented the keyboard with the new scissor spring. So most keyboards wobble a little bit. I think that's maybe part of the design. It makes you type more accurately. Apple's new keyboard doesn't have much travel. It can't, and it has a new double-ended spring that keeps it from wobbling. Again, only time will tell. We'll have to try it. They've replaced the original trackpad with this new Force Touch trackpad. That's kind of interesting. The original Apple trackpads, you press down, they click. I mean, not all companies make trackpads like this. That's how Apple made theirs. So there's a physical when you press down on the trackpad. The new Force Touch doesn't move. But, and I think this is unique, I don't think anybody's done this before, it senses how hard you're pressing it. It's pressure sensitive. We've seen that on screens for tablets. We've seen it on Wacom, you know, tablets. But I can't think of any time we've seen it on a trackpad. And that's interesting because it means the harder you press, it does something different. Light press is a click. The hard press is a right click. Or, yeah, of course, you can adjust it and change it. I think that's intriguing. Again, until we try it, we don't know. But here's the most controversial thing Apple did with its new MacBook. There's only one connector. And this is what's driving people crazy. there's a headphone jack. There's microphone, little ports for microphones, so that it has a microphone. And but then on the other side, no USB port, no video port, no SD card slot, none of that. Just one connector. It does everything. It's power. It's data. It's video. And it's and this is unusual for Apple. It's an industry standard. It's the USB Type-C adapter. This is the newest USB 3 adapter. And actually, I really like it for a couple of things. One reason is it's not upright. There's no orientation. It can go in either way. It's like Apple's Lightning plug. Goes in either way. It can power up to 100 watts. That means it could be used for laptop power. That's how Apple's using it. But it also can, it's two-way power. So you can charge a phone, plug a phone, but you need that special cable, but you can plug a phone in. You can use it for data. In fact, Apple will sell, even though this is a $1,300 laptop, so it's a pricey laptop, you still have to buy for $79 an additional dongle that plugs into the USB-C port and gives you regular USB power and an HDMI video port. So that's another thing driving people crazy. $79, but I paid $12.99 for this. Yes, you should probably get that. It means while you're charging your computer, you can't do anything. You can't plug in a phone. You can't do anything. You have to unplug the power. Now they say 9-hour battery life, so maybe you're not charging much. And I have to admit, I think about how I use my laptop. I rarely plug anything but power into it. But you would have to think about how you use your laptop and whether you could live with a laptop that doesn't let you do a lot of those other things. I think it's a laptop for somebody who does a certain kind of computing, very, you know, wants a lightweight, easy-to-use computer. Oh, that's another thing, and not a very fast processor. But they couldn't. It's the latest generation Intel, you know, fifth-generation processor, but it's their mobile part. It's a Core i5M. Which is only uses 5 watts of power. That's very low, but it's not very fast. It's really not very fast. And so that's another thing. If you're you wouldn't use it to edit video, or you probably wouldn't use Photoshop on the thing. It does come with 8 gigs of RAM and 256 gig hard drive for that $12.99. I'll be honest with you. At first, I saw it. I kind of had a little bit of a desire, shall I say, for it. Ooh. Ooh, techno lust, they call it. And to make it even more lust-worthy, they make it silver, kind of gunmetal gray, and gold. Ooh. But then I thought about it. At $12.99, I'm going to let somebody else be the first one to get it and see how they like it. It would probably work with the kind of computing I do. It's not going to be your only computer for most people. You'd still need maybe a desktop that you could, you know, connect all those other things, your camera too, and all that stuff. But I think if you buy it, you'll probably get the $79 dongle, and then you can connect power and a camera and a video, you know, a display, an outboard display. Props to Apple. I admire Apple because they're willing to take a big chance and they're willing to advance or attempt to advance technology and create a new platform. We'll see if this is a winner or a loser. It could go either way. And I'm, for one, going to stand back and watch and see what happens. Hey, it's time to take some more calls. Let me do that right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to get back to the phones. And on the line, Eric in Hutchinson, Kansas. Hey, Eric.
How are you, Leo?
I'm well. Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you, my friend?
Okay, what I want to do, and
I want to see if you would recommend it. I want to play with the released, what do you call it, the beta version of Windows 10.
Yes, you do, don't you? Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Now, remember, it's not complete. It's very early. It's got bugs, so it's not something you'd want to use on your day-to-day machine.
Exactly. So what I want to do is if you would put it in the show notes where we can where a guy could download it, because I want to put it on a I want to make a bootable image of it, or make a boot.
Yeah, that's what I did. You put it on a USB key, and then you can either install it in a virtual machine on your existing Windows box. That way you don't lose your Windows 8, but you've got Windows 10 to play with. I did actually on a Macintosh, same idea. Or if you have an old beater computer you want to install it on, you can do it that way too. The program is called the Windows...
Go ahead. I was wondering if I could make a... I've got a partition on my hard drive that's got...
yeah, you could do a dual boot.
Yeah, so I want to make a dual boot so that I can keep using Windows 7 and then play around with this and...
Dual boot or virtual machine is recommended. The program is called Windows Insider. And so I can't give you a link to a download. That's not how Microsoft wants to do it. They want you to join. It's free to do so. The Windows Insider program. Once you do so, and it's just a question of logging into it, they'll give you a link for the download. It's Insider, and we'll put this in the show notes, insider.windows.com. And what this is Microsoft decided we're going to give as many people as possible an opportunity to try Windows 10 before it's released this fall. I mean, we're talking 6 months from now. And make sure we find all the bugs and it's as reliable as possible. But the version they're shipping out is very early tests version that's probably not only not feature complete, but not fully reliable. So it is recommended, if you want to play with it, that you kind of be, you don't have to be an expert, but kind of understand a little bit about how Windows works. And perhaps can be of value to them in bug testing. But they seem to be letting a lot of people in. They don't seem to have any restrictions on this. I don't think it's full yet. So insider.windows.com is the Microsoft Insider program. But you do need to sign up, because when you do, you'll get a Windows activation key and so forth. And you'll need all of that. I can't just give you a link to download it. In other words, Microsoft wants you to go to them and sign up. Bill and Tarzana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
So I have a Samsung Series 7 Kronos laptop.
Okay.
The hard drive is, I believe, 1 terabyte. I have a C partition that's about 100 gigabytes, and then a D partition that's the balance of the drive. What I want to do is extend my C drive, but the problem is I have 2 OEM partitions in between the C and the D drive.
Okay.
So I'm not able to, using some of the free downloads, partition magic, I tried to extend the
C drive. So they complain, they say, I cannot expand it because of the way your drive is arranged.
Correct. Yeah. I do have a 55 gig unallocated partition, but it's to the right of the D drive as I'm looking at the Windows screen. So I'm not sure how to capture that 50 gigabytes into the C drive.
Yeah, and you don't want to lose the Windows partition there, because that contains your copy of Microsoft Windows. You'll need that to restore from and so forth. In fact, you can delete it if you have a copy, but it's just you need to know what you're doing before you mess with it. So if you can't find a program that'll move it, and I'm surprised you can't, but maybe that's just, you know, it has to do with the geometry of the drive and so forth. Then what you want to do is back it up and basically take that Windows recovery partition and put it somewhere else, put it at the end of the drive. And then you can expand the C partition. That's a weird allocation. They only gave you 100 gigabytes for the Windows install.
I believe when I first got the laptop, it was all one drive, and then I partitioned it into two. I realized I didn't make the C partition large enough, so I tried to capture 50 gigabytes and again it put it to the right of the D drive, which is complicating the matter.
So I guess I would suggest making a I mean, the chat room is saying, well, you can do this with tools like GPartEd, but that, which is a free open source tool that is fairly, it takes some skill to operate. So I guess you could do it, but I think probably you'd be better off, at least before you tried, you'd be better off making a backup of your recovery partition. You don't want to lose that recovery partition.
Correct. Yeah, because I've been taking your advice and I've been reformatting the drive every year or so since I've had the machine.
Yeah. I mean, if you've made your recovery disks, you don't need the recovery partition. This makes me nervous. I think what you want to do is move the D partition all the way to the end of the drive, and then you can expand the C partition. Some tools will let you just move a partition, slide it over. So maybe you need to find that tool. Otherwise, then remove the partition, back it up, remove it, repartition the drive, and then you've got a bigger C partition. Yeah. You know, when I suggested making different partitions, that was kind of a finesse that maybe isn't necessary. The problem is that Windows and all the applications really want to be on the C drive. It doesn't make sense, and it doesn't work very well to separate those. They all want to be on the C drive, so you need to have enough space for Windows and however many apps you might install. 100 gigabytes, you know, for some people that's plenty. For others, it's not enough. And then I like the idea of having a separate partition for your data, because that keeps the data separate when you reinstall Windows and so forth. It just doesn't touch that drive. A number of people are suggesting Acronis True Image. That's a good one. A little easier, but it's not free. GPartEd.org, GPartEd.org is free, but not maybe that intuitive. On the other hand, if you look at it and think about it and figure it out, that would be great. PartitionWizard.com has one. So there's a few choices. I'll let the chat room kind of spit those out, and we'll put them in the show notes at TechGuyLabs.com. This is kind of an advanced topic, but I guess I got you into it by telling you to do the partitions in the first place. Nowadays, I just leave it the way it is. Realize that you mess with Windows too much and you're going to get bit. Just let Microsoft decide what to do. Paragon Software, paragon-software.com has a personal version of its partitioner that somebody else in the chat room is recommending. EaseUS is another good one. EaseUS. You should be able to zip the D drive over, or rather recovery partition all the way over to the right, and then merge the D and C drive. That's really what you kind of want to do. We're going to take a break, take more of your calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There he is in his big old jet airliner flying around the world. He's in a very comfortable part of the jet airliner today. Johnny Jet, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing all right.
Johnny is still in Austin, South by Southwest at the Tripit Pavilion. And how's the party? Has it been going good?
Oh, man, it's so loud right now that I'm in the can.
What?
The only quiet place you can find.
Actually, it's very quiet. It's not too echoey. I just hope nobody flushes. Your secret would have been safe.
I think the toilet paper roll gave it away.
So Johnny's our travel guru, goes all over the place speaking and lecturing and joins us each week to help us save money using technology with a website or an app or both. What do you got for us?
So my first app, and it's a new travel app, actually. You helped me learn about it, or you made me get on it. It's called Meerkat.
No, are you meerkatting?
I just meerkatted. And it's got to be one of the hottest apps out there.
Well, especially South by Southwest. It's like the viral video champion at South by.
It's awesome. So what you do is you download it. Actually, it took a while to download. I don't know if it was such a slow connection here.
Oh, it's terrible.
But yeah. But once you download it, you just allow it to accept Twitter. And once you do that, all you do is hit live stream. And you hold the phone up, and wherever you are, you can be live streaming, and it will exactly tweet out saying, Johnny Jet's now meerkatting, or...
Are you going to be doing this now? Are you going to be doing this?
I just did it.
Are you meerkatting right now while you're talking in the bathroom? Are you meerkatting?
No, I don't think anyone wants to see that.
But I think the idea is
cool.
You get to – look, there have been programs like this for years. I remember Quick, Q-W-I-K, Social Cam. But what's happened is the speeds have gotten higher. Cameras on phones are better. And Twitter makes this really easy because it automatically tweets out that you're doing it. And it's all the rage. I know at South by Southwest. Everybody's doing it.
Yeah, I tested it out. I had no idea how to do it. I did it.
It was easy, wasn't it?
People started popping up saying, first it said zero people following.
Right.
And then within 10 seconds, it said one person, three people.
Right.
Then you could see their comments at the bottom lower left. You could see exactly what they're saying. They're saying, Johnny Jett's meerkatting. And it's a great way to publicize an event. And I was just reading an article in Time Magazine, how they're saying, you know, next month is a big fight, I think, with Manny Pacquiao, the boxer.
Yeah.
And now I think the promoters are worried about, you know, people aren't going to pay the $59 for the fight because people are going to be meerkatting from the seats.
This is going to be a big issue at live events, isn't it?
That's really interesting.
The picture's pretty good if you've got Wi-Fi, but it's not. It's for one thing, weirdly, but I think sensibly, they make you hold the camera upright, the phone upright. So it's all portrait style video, not right, like you're used to widescreen video. So true. I think even at sporting events, it won't be as good as the broadcast, but it's kind of fun to see it from a seat or to see behind the scenes. I think there's something to be said for this. And one of the things that's interesting about Meerkat, it's kind of like Snapchat. It doesn't save the video. You can't go back. If you miss the live video, it's over.
Right. But you can hit save, and it will save it to your
You can save it locally. Yeah.
And it's only for the iPhone.
Yes, so unfortunately. It's one of those, isn't it?
But I think celebrities are going to get a lot of play out of it because, you know, behind the scenes, before they're in the green room or, what you know, on the movie set, I think a lot of people would love to see that.
I had 999 people watching my first meerkat, and I think that it doesn't go past that. I feel like it didn't go any higher than that. 999.
Oh, yeah, I bet you it doesn't go past.
I bet you that was the – I bet you I maxed it out. But can you imagine you turn on this thing on your iPhone and you've got 1,000 people watching what you're doing?
Yeah. Especially if you're traveling.
Incredible. You know, well, I expect more meerkatting from Johnny.
I will. I'm walking down the aisle of an airplane. Here's my seat. Or, you know, going to Iguazu Falls in Argentina, somewhere cool, or skiing in Alberta.
Wow.
You can just...
So follow Johnny Jett at Johnny Jett, and you'll get a tweet. You know, you need to install Meerkat. You can do it on the web if you want, but it's easiest to do on your iPhone or your iPad. There is an iPad version. And follow Johnny Jett, and that way he'll tweet you, and you'll know, and you won't miss it. I'll be watching for you. I get notifications all the time from people meerkatting. It seems to be very popular.
It's starting to blow up.
Yep.
So okay. I got a website for you now.
Yes, sir.
And I'm typing it in while I speak to you. So Google flights. So go to google.com/flights.
Google.com. Google's into everything, aren't they? Google.com/flights.
So they've been rolling this out for, you know, they've been working on this for a while, but they've really just released it, and they've actually done a very good job.
You know what? This looks a little bit like... I don't know, Orbitz or Kayak. It's a flight search engine.
Well, Google owns ITA software, which I've talked about many times. It's a great way to search for flights. But ITA, actually, you can tell they're putting it on the back burner, and I'm sure it's because they want to drive people here. Because on ITA software, you can't book tickets. You can just search stuff, but you can't pay for anything. But see, look on the right there where it says expand map.
Yeah.
I love this function of it.
Ooh.
So you can put in San Francisco, and it will show you everywhere around the world what it would cost to fly from San Francisco on those dates to wherever. You put in Austin, but you can look and see.
I could go to Chihuahua, Mexico for $722 or Casper, Wyoming for $603.
But you can even scroll down. You can even go wider and go to Europe or Asia.
Wow,
or
this is cool.
Or zoom in to go into to little cities.
Wow.
And this is my favorite function of the Google flights, because it makes it so easy. Because if you don't know where you want to go,
just look
and you're like, hey, I'm in San Francisco or wherever you are, and these are dates I want to travel. You can punch it in and see what it will cost you.
You know what I really like? They've got a graph here showing pricing. So this, you know, people always ask you, I know, when's the best time to get a ticket? When does the price drop? Well, if you're curious, you can see. Or is this for different travel days?
Well, yeah, it all this depends is for different travel destination.
Days. Yeah. So but you usually, can see now that it's South by Southwest is winding down, it's getting cheaper and cheaper to go to Austin. But last week, oh, you pay through the nose. Look at that. Right. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Oh, this is nice. This is Google Flight. Flights.
Google.com/flights.
Wow.
So the cheapest days, by the way, to fly are usually Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Saturdays. So that is the way to save money whenever you're traveling. You know, a lot of people like to price out their vacations, you know, Friday to Sunday.
Right.
Or whatever. Start looking at Tuesdays to Tuesdays or Saturday to Saturday.
That's interesting.
And you can save some money.
Huh.
And they also, by the way, on that Google Flights, they also have a I'm feeling lucky button. So it just
picks a random flight.
So if you go back to that, you'll see.
That's hysterical. So
the first time I did it was Vegas, and I was like, wow,
I am lucky. I got very lucky.
I wonder if feeling lucky is always Vegas, but it's not.
It's not.
After a few other clicks, I realized that's not the case.
It shows you previous searches, popular destinations. This is very cool. Yeah, this is very cool. Johnny Jett, he's in Austin, Texas for the big South by Southwest Festival. I imagine he'll be doing a little more Meerkat streaming from there. And where do you go after Austin?
I'm going, you got to follow me on Twitter.
Oh, he doesn't secret. Like to big say. Secret. He likes to surprise everybody. I like that.
Big secret.
You never know where secret. Johnny's going to be. Right now, Johnny's on the pot. I'm sorry, yeah, spot.
Can you hear people banging on the door?
What are you doing in there? Get out of there.
The door up so you can see their expressions.
JohnnyJett.com. Yeah, go ahead. Just let's meerkat this adventure. If you go there, you can find Johnny and his blog and all of his newsletters and subscribe and the Twitter and the Instagram. It's all Johnny Jett. Thank you, Johnny Jett.
Thank you.
He's the best. Okay, bye-bye, Johnny. We go back to the phones. And hey, look, what are you doing in there? Just a radio show. What are you doing? Get out of there. We'll be back with more phone calls in just a little bit. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Personal Capital. Which, I have a little, sometimes a lot of trouble explaining what personal capital is because it's more than just one thing in a way. You start by going to personalcapital.com/techguy and setting up, putting all your accounts in there. Now, it's secure. It's totally free to do this. What you'll get is a dashboard. When I say accounts, I mean credit cards, checking, very important, your investment accounts, your mortgage, all of that stuff. Now what you're going to get is a single screen dashboard on your computer, your iPad, your iPhone, your Android device. They even have an Android Wear app that will tell you where you stand, what your net worth is, where your money's going. It helps you budget. In fact, they have a budgeting tool. So that's really cool. And that's all free, very easy to use, highly recommended. I started doing that 2 years ago, and I'll check in weekly just to see how's everything going. But then it goes another step beyond that. Because the point of personal capital, I think, it was created by my friend Bill Harris. The idea was people, you know, everybody's in theory, and the government makes this easy to do, and with any luck, your employer does too, saving for retirement, right? You have a 401k. I hope you do if you don't get one. Or an IRA, if your employer doesn't provide it, an IRA. Or just a savings account. The thing is, you can do all this tax-deferred savings. It's really great. And generally what you do, you don't just like kind of leave the money there, the cash there. You invest it. And therein lies the rub because it's very easy, first of all, if you're going to do it yourself, to not allocate it properly, to spend, to buy funds that are, you know, shaving dollars and years off your retirement, stuff like that. Or maybe you hired an advisor. And maybe that person's giving you good advice. Maybe not. A lot of times advisors work on commissions, so they are interested in you doing a lot of trading. That's not a good thing for your retirement account. So there's all sorts of pitfalls. So personal capital will help you understand what's happening with your retirement, help you plan for it. They'll help you figure out if, for instance, the load on a mutual fund is too high or you're paying too much in fees. All of that's great, but now they go to another step. If you've put more than $100,000 into the dashboard there, and that's pretty easy if you have more than $100,000 in assets, That includes, you know, all your assets. You can, if you wish, get a free call with one of their advisors. Personal Capital has fee-based advisors, a great team of financial advisors. They'll give you a 30-minute review of everything, what you're doing, your financial goals, your risk tolerance. They'll ask you about, you know, what your time horizon for retirement is, and they'll really help you with the most fundamental, most important retirement planning. It's free. This is new. And if you're tracking $100,000 or more on the Personal Capital dashboard, you're in. You can also, they also allow you to invest. You can put money into a Personal Capital account and they can be your broker. So there's all these levels that you can do. But basically free right now, go to personalcapital.com/techguy, get that dashboard set up. And if you have more than $100,000 in assets on the dashboard, you'll get a free consultation from their very good, not commission-based, certified financial planners. They're really good. I think this is a great offer. I encourage you to take advantage of it. PersonalCapital.com/TechGuy. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Richard's on the line from Tuckahoe, New York. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Leo. So nice of you to pick up. Long-time listener from Screensaver Days.
Nice.
I am conflicted with archiving of photos. If you can put into your show notes your workflow.
All right.
I have had two trips to Japan, one to the Kyoto area, one to the Hokkaido area, and have relegated all of the photos to an iPhone 6.
No.
I am so frustrated.
No, let's get them off that. Although, if you have iDrive, or iCloud, I should say, and if you've bought enough storage on the iCloud, that's not a bad solution. You put it up on the iCloud, you've got it backed up, and you can then, on any other Apple device, see all your stuff. In fact, when Photos comes out, which it will in the next version of OS 10, Mavericks 10.3, I'm sorry, Yosemite 10.3, you'll see that they have really solved this problem in a very nice way, so that all your photos are available everywhere on everything you use. But I'll tell you how I do it. And first of all, I'm going to send you to a place that was created by the Professional Association of Photographers and my friend Peter Krog. Peter wrote the DAM book. DAM stands for Digital Asset Management. It is the book. In fact, I wouldn't hesitate to recommend the DAM book as required reading for people who are serious about photography and making sure they don't lose their stuff. It's Digital Asset Management for Photographers. But he also created a great website called DP Best Flow, dpbestflow.org. And it was created by the American Society of Media Photographers, ASMP, in conjunction with the Library of Congress. And, of course, the Library of Congress cares a lot about archiving and saving. And what they did with this site is they talk about workflow in general. And really, your question is not merely about backing up, but about workflow. You take a picture, what happens then? You know, where do you put it? How do you store it? If you're going to work on it in Lightroom or Aperture or some other program, how you do that. And this page is fantastic for just all of the ins and outs. There's resources here. There's best practices. There's a very good section that I often refer to on backup. Peter calls it his 3-2-1 backup. You've heard me talk about that. So if you want to read a lot, and this is a book's worth of material, dpbestflow.org or the DAM book, which covers much of the same material. Peter Krog is Krogh. Now, I should do all of this, and I don't. Here's what I do, and we'll put it on the show notes, but I can do it in a nutshell. When I take pictures, as you have a lot of pictures, are you taking them on a phone or are you taking them on a camera?
Right now I'm taking them on a phone because I can share them so quickly and easily.
Yep. And by the way, those new iPhones have great cameras, so you can do a lot of great stuff in an iPhone. Apple just put up online, if you go to apple.com, an amazing gallery of photos from the iPhone, and they're as good as anything I've ever seen. They're gorgeous photos, so it shows you really can do a lot with an iPhone. But you can't just leave them on the iPhone, because what if you lose the iPhone? What if the iPhone dies? That's your only copy. So you've got to, first thing, when you get back, sync up to your computer, and I would, you know, iPhoto will now take a copy of everything off your iPhone. If you've got room to keep it on the iPhone, I wouldn't rush to delete it from the iPhone. But eventually, you're going to have to. We hear from people all the time who filled up their iPhone storage with photos. It doesn't take long. So unless you have a lot of storage in your iPhone, eventually you're going to want to move them off. But then that means you only have one copy on your computer, so you'll want to use iCloud or some other form of backup. I use Lightroom, but you might, since you're going to use iPhotos, or iPhotos will be replaced very soon by Photos. Photos will let you keep track of all the photos you have, but you may also want to back them up somewhere, a hard drive. I usually try to keep three copies of everything. But get it off the camera, or at least get a copy from the camera, so that you're not just relying on the iPhone to store your stuff.
Excellent. I can't thank you enough. Can I throw out some content for a future show?
Sure.
The Vin Cerf's comment about media put the fear of God in me, and perhaps that might be a good interview with Chris Marquardt.
All right. Now, first, what did Vince Cerf, the father of the internet, what did he say?
Well, he said that any media that is stored needs to keep a record of how it was created.
Yes.
With an image, I believe he said this, of what that looked like. Can you imagine taking a picture and also taking a picture of a zip disk, including that with the picture?
Well, and Vince making the point, which is a very important point, that that digital archivists and librarians spend a lot of time thinking about, which is, in the old days, you would carve what you cared about in rock. That's why we still know kind of what the Egyptians thought about, because thousands of years later, those rock inscriptions have survived. Next best thing, papyrus. We have a few papyrus scrolls from 3,000 or 4,000 years ago. But you can pretty much be sure that anything you're writing on a disk today won't be readable in 100 years, probably not in a few decades. So what do you do if you want to preserve it? One thing that helps a lot is cloud storage, because you're kind of kicking the can down the road with cloud storage. Cloud storage, you don't know what it's stored on. It could be stored on a rock. It could be stored on a hard drive. It could be stored on a solid state disk. It could be stored in a three-dimensional holographic data rendering. We don't know or care, because it just comes in over the internet as bits. And the people who run cloud storage, it's kind of behooves them to keep it backed up. And as times change and there's new storage forms of storage media, they just move it over. But the bits can still come to you using a protocol that's well known, the HTTP protocol. And that means we'll be able to read those probably for quite some time to come. So storing on the cloud right now is a good short-term solution, probably better than carving that movie into a rock. That's a lot. If, you know, 30 frames a second, that's a lot of carving. A movie, better off in the cloud, better off on those storage devices. Let Google or Microsoft or Apple or Amazon or whoever you're using for cloud storage, like Carbonite, let them worry about backing it up. They have to, and they will. Let them worry about, you know, multi-homing it. They'll have, you know, very often they'll have servers in different cities just in case. And on making sure that it's on a medium, whether it's hard drive or something else that can be read, they'll handle all that for you. All you have to do is be able to have some sort of connection to them. And I don't think the internet is going to change as fast as disk storage media or disk storage types. I think the protocols that we use are going to be here for a long time. And, you know, as long as you have some connection, actually longer probably than Microsoft, Google, or Apple, so maybe do all three just in case. Hope one of them lasts 100 years. And then your descendants will have to make the same kinds of decisions. Oh, we got grandpa's pictures of Japan. They're stored on Google. Google's going out of business. Let's move them over to, you know, Dinkum Winkum Company. That's the hot new thing. Dinkum Winkum's going to take care of them. Somebody's going to have to keep an eye on this stuff. And I think that's really what Vince kind of saying is, don't assume that that zip disk will be readable in 5 years or a year or 10 years. Don't assume that floppy is. What if you had floppies with your pictures on them today? What would you read them with? Do you have a floppy drive? Do you have a zip disk drive? Probably not. Do you have a Bernoulli box or an Orb or a Jazz? These are all very popular forms of storing data from not so many years ago that are long gone. Keep them in the cloud. The cloud is going to be around for a while, I think. It's an interesting question, and we will do a show. I'll talk to Chris about his archival storage techniques. It's a fascinating subject, frankly, and I feel like it is something that, you know, sometimes we think librarians are worried about books and card catalogs. The modern librarian spends a lot of time thinking about this. They're archivists as much as anything else. Folks at the Library of Congress thinking about it. I know many people studying library science, and this is the meat of library science these days, is information retrieval, big data, archiving, all of those things. It's changed quite a bit, but putting it on DVDs and putting them in bubble wrap in your closet, probably not such a good idea. I think the cloud has come to the rescue. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. We're going to take a break at the top of the hour, but come back with lots more of your calls. Dick DiBartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer, coming up too, our gadget guy next hour. Stick around. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. That's where you'll find all the information we talk about. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theaters, smartphones, digital photography, all that jazz. Our gadget guru, Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz, coming up in about 45 minutes. But meanwhile, I'm going to go right back to the phones. Let's go all the way to Albany, Oregon. That's where Mark hangs his hat. Hey, Mark, welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, hey, Leo.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. Last time we talked was on the screensavers.
You're kidding.
Absolutely not.
Well, that's more than 10 years ago.
I know. And I still remember the question.
What was your question?
It was about the TV ads being too loud on, I think it was DirecTV.
It's still a problem. It hasn't been fixed.
Oh, no, I don't know if it's been fixed since then.
No, I still get questions. I still get people calling saying, why are the ads so loud? And at the time, there were some electronic devices that promised to help. And, you know, there are rules about how loud those ads can be, but it doesn't matter. It's the apparent loudness.
And it's how big the company is that has to follow the rules.
That's true, too. Channel 384 on DirecTV. Boy, that brings back a memory. What can I do for you today?
Well, I've got a bunch of old phones, and one of them is an old LG flip phone.
Oh, my.
And it was actually Singular before AT&T.
Yes, that's right.
I've got a video on it.
Uh-oh.
And it's a very important one.
Uh-oh.
And this kind of goes in with the whole archiving thing.
Is it a video of your child being born?
Well.
Your wedding?
My dog.
Your first kiss?
He's my child.
So it's on the phone, and are you able to keep the phone charged? That's the first question.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
That's good news,
yeah,
because
it works and it plays. Actually, I while I was on hold, I thought of a potential solution, and that is to play the video back and take another phone and zoom in real close and just do an analog capture.
That's not ideal, but I would do it now just in case.
Right.
Because at some point, that phone's going to stop taking a charge because those batteries, they're not going to keep working. And
so,
once the phone can't be powered up, this gets much harder.
Yeah.
Was there at the time any way to connect that phone to a computer?
Well, it has Bluetooth. And at the time that I took the video, I didn't use Bluetooth.
Yeah, Bluetooth is not going to, in this case, not going to be any help at all. The Bluetooth profile from those days was purely for headphones. It didn't have any video capability.
Well, as of sending a file.
Have had file capability. Actually, you're right. It might have been able to do that.
Yeah, the problem now is that anything that I try to pair it with doesn't recognize that old, I guess, not firmware, but the Bluetooth version, I'm assuming, I guess.
Yeah, that's probably the case, yeah.
And I even took it into a couple of an AT&T store and also a couple of phone stores.
Yeah, because phone stores often have ways of sucking data off of the phones.
Right. And
just like the cops. The cops can do that too. pull over a police officer and ask him to pull the video off. I'm being somewhat facetious, but in fact, police do frequently carry around devices that are designed to do precisely that. Not sure if they'd work with that old flip phone. Because it has an unusual connector, right? It's a proprietary connector and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I did get a cable from one of the AT&T people. I tried hooking it up to all kinds of systems, and just nothing will recognize it. I don't know if it's driver issues or what.
Well, your phone would have to be put, and you should look in the menu of the phone to see if it can be put in a storage mode so it looks like a drive.
Yeah, there's no settings for any of that.
Yeah. There used to be some software, and I'm going to have to ask the chat room to help me with this because I for sure have forgotten the name of it. But there was software that would let you connect a flip phone to your computer via USB, and the purpose was to put ringtones on it. But you could, in fact, browse the phone. And it was very funky.
The cable I've got is it's proprietary on one end and USB on the other.
Yeah, it was very funky software. It was PIM something. The chat room is so smart. It was PIM something. And it allowed you, by the way, PIM in this case stood for phone interface module, I think. It allowed you to connect software and browse the phone. And this is how we used to put ringtones on these old flip phones. It was funky. It was BitPim, thank you. Boy, the chat room's good. All right, a gold star to Pastor Hudson in the chat room, who actually remembered. He must be a younger fellow than I am. BITPIM. Now, let's see if you can still get it. See if they still make it. Yeah, BitPim, BITPIM.org. Holy cow. It says it lets you get onto CDMA phones. That's what yours is. From LG, Samsung, Sanyo, and other manufacturers. So you've got the USB cable. Now you're going to need to get BitPim. Find a machine you can run it on. Probably any Windows machine, it'll work. It is open source, so that means it's probably being kept up to date. Last version is 2010. And you're going to, it works with Windows 7. That's good news. And Mac OS 10. And you're going to be able to then connect the phone to it. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, you'll see the phone. And you should be able to copy the data, or I hope, copy the file off. Now, that video will be in a weird format, probably, I think it's 3GP, something like that. So you'll need to then find something that could play it back. Try VLC, the VLC player from videoland.org. VLC can play back almost anything, including those old weird phone codecs. It won't look like great video. You know that. You're looking on it in a small screen and it already doesn't look so good. This is exactly what we were talking about last hour. We were talking about archival data. You know, get your stuff to the cloud. Hie thee to the cloud. Get that, when you get that dog video off of your phone, put it on the cloud, because then you won't have to go through this again. So bitpim.org, get the software, connect that USB thing onto your Windows computer, your Mac. Try to browse the phone. You'll have to be able to turn it on, and you want to do this as soon as you can, because you're not going to be able to turn that phone on again anytime. You know, soon that battery is just going to stop taking a charge and nothing's going to work. And then browse around till you find a 3G. It'd probably be a 3GP file. That's the format most phones used in those days. Just copy that off. VLC should be able to play that back. Maybe even export it into a more modern format and then upload it. Wow. Handbrake can convert it, says Nowhere Man and Pastor Hudson. Man, you guys are good. Did you look that up on the Google, or did you just know it off the top of your head? Pretty impressive. BitPim. It's funky. It crashes a lot, at least my experience, and this was some years ago. Very unreliable. But it's the only thing that'll do it. Because in those days, nobody imagined you wanting to get anything off the phone. What would you even have on the phone that you would want? Can you? I guess if you could get a SIM card for it, you can't though because it ran on the old analog singular networks. None of the phone networks are analog anymore. They all went digital some years ago. 8888 Ask Leo. We'll put this in the chat room. We'll put this and all the chat room's comments in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Now, if you have a thought or a better idea, if you read that and you say, oh, here's another way to do it, or if you're thinking that right now, that's where to do all that. That's the website, techguylabs.com. Every show, audio and video, we break it down day by day, hour by hour, question by question. You actually read the question and my answer. You can listen to it. You can watch it. And then, most importantly, you can add to the value of the website greatly by just adding your comments and your thoughts and your suggestions. Always free, no charge, no sign up. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He is our next call. She is our next caller from Maui, Wowie, Lori. Hi, Lori.
Maui, Wowie, baby.
I love Maui, man. You live there year-round, or are you?
25 years.
How long?
25 years.
Wow. You've seen it change dramatically, haven't you?
Yeah.
We were back in Maui. I hadn't been to Maui in 20 years. We went back this summer, and I couldn't believe it.
Oh, I can imagine.
Kihei was this little town where you get shave ice. Now it's like a strip mall.
Well, not quite.
Not quite that bad, but it's still a beautiful. And my favorite place in the world is down there at the tip there, Hana. I love Hana.
Oh, that was gorgeous.
Oh,
yeah,
so
I'm glad
pretty.
You guys had a chance to go out
I
there
am
and
too.
Travassa, yeah?
Yeah, Travassa. And I feel like Hana hasn't changed.
No, it hasn't. No.
It's too hard to get to.
Fantastic. you can't. It takes too long. Yeah, nobody's going to just move there. Unless,
Well, George Harrison moved there, I think, but nobody else. Anyway, I'm sorry. You got me all thinking about Hawaii now. What can I do for you, Lori?
It's okay. I'm wanting to stream music from my iPhone, iPad, and I'm trying to figure. I have a cheapy little speaker, which is fine for talk radio, but it's not really all that great for music.
Yeah.
And I have an external hard drive, which is Wi-Fi enabled. It's called a G-Connect.
Yeah.
Came out a few years ago.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's 500 gigs. I can put almost all my music on there.
Nice.
And so I'm trying to figure out the best way to go about this. It's for one room. I live in a studio apartment, but it has tall ceiling. I have a surround sound system.
Oh, so that's what you'd want to play it through.
Yeah, so I was thinking that I would get a Bluetooth receiver for my surround sound system.
Do you have, so your surround sound system set up for your TV, do you have an AV receiver attached to it, or how is it powered?
Oh, okay, so it's an older Panasonic, it was a 5-disc changer.
It was a home theater in a box is what it was.
Yeah.
So it had everything in it, a Blu-ray player, but not a separate. It doesn't have a separate AV receiver.
No.
Well, it all connects to the Blu-ray player.
It all, no.
No.
Receiver is a radio.
Yeah, that's a receiver. It's an amp.
Player.
It's an amp and a receiver and a CD player. It's all in one. Yeah, okay.
It's
probably too old to have
auxiliary on the front, and then it's got, or I could hook it up in the back, and I didn't look to see if it had optical. But
This is what I would do. I would look and see what kind of connectors. For instance, my AV receiver, has a USB port, and I could plug the hard drive into that and just play the music from the hard drive directly.
Yeah, there goes my computer on the floor. Hello.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want to save that?
Okay. This thing is, I think, too old to have an optical on the back. Yeah, it is. And so.
So that's the question: is what kind of connections do you have? If you had USB, if you had optical, you probably have analog inputs. I'm sure auxiliary input and left and right like that. You can always just put the iPhone put a cable into the earphone and jack of the iPhone and connect it to the back, play it that way. But you don't want to wire it?
Yeah, I would rather not wire it. Yeah. It's just more convenient, That way, because here's what I'm noticing, is that there's a big gap, a wide range of price, points on these things. And, on Amazon, for example,
Yeah, I mean, they make, I'm looking right now at a $25 Bluetooth audio receiver. So you pair it to your phone, and then you plug it into the aux jack on your stereo, and it just plays right out of there.
Right, yeah, and there's a big range there. I mean, does it matter how much you pay?
Well, this is $25 bucks. I mean, I don't think you need to spend more than that. Because basically all this is a Bluetooth receiver. You'd have to check the specs to make sure it does something called A2DP. That's the stereo Bluetooth connection that you want. Bluetooth has a variety of profiles. And the worst profile is the headset profile. Then you'd go, oh, is there automation or sound like on the phone? So you don't want that. But you want A2DP. Yeah. That'll give you left and right and stereo. And it's decent sound. Bluetooth is not going to be as good as a hardwired connection. But I don't think most people would notice the difference. So,
well, see, that's what I was wondering, too, because I bought a Bluetooth for my car, which also has an older stereo. And, you know, we don't have a lot of radio stations out here, so there's not a lot of interference. But I was not happy with the sound quality at all. There was a lot of hiss and, you know, and that's why I wondered, does it matter how much you pay? Because there's a Bose one on there for about $60.
Yeah, don't get the $40 of that $60 is brand advertising.
Yeah, okay.
For Bose.
Right. And then, what about this?
Yeah.
What if I got an Apple TV, which is a little redundant because I have a Samsung that has all the apps on there.
Well.
But with Apple TV, could I AirPlay even though it's coming from
absolutely
the Connect gadget?
Apps. You could connect the Apple TV to your home theater in a box and AirPlay right to it. The nice thing about that is you would get a nice interface on the screen. So you'd be able to control it with the remote instead of the phone.
Uh-huh.
You could do both.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's a great solution.
I don't have to have the screen on for that, do I?
No.
No, because it just goes into the stereo.
Well, the problem with the Apple TV is once you start using that, you kind of want to see the, I guess if you AirPlay into it, no. You don't need any controls. So, yeah, I guess you could do that.
Well, the controls would be on my phone.
Yeah, no, you know, because the Apple TV thinks you've got a TV set on, I'm trying to think if you would need to see anything on the TV set. And I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so.
Because I was at my daughter's house one time, and I was listening probably to your podcast or you live on the weekend. They live over in Napa, by the way.
Oh.
All live there. Yeah, and they own restaurants over in St. Helena.
Oh,
great
little town.
And, yeah, it's nice to go visit there because I eat really well.
I bet you do.
Restaurant owners.
I eat a little too well myself.
And while I was at her house, I was listening to a podcast for you live on the weekend. And she said, here, and she turned on her stereo. I still call it a stereo.
And you heard me on the stereo.
And the sound came out of the stereo, and the TV wasn't on.
Nice. Was she using an Apple TV?
And I was, yes. She was using Apple TV, and I was on my iPad.
Yeah.
So while
AirPlay is pretty amazing. AirPlay is pretty amazing. And Apple TV is $99. The only at all caveat I would say is that there's probably going to be a new Apple TV any day now. I feel like this is the year Apple's going to update it and update it significantly. However, I think an Apple TV would be a good choice. More expensive than this simple Bluetooth receiver that Amazon sells. And either one will get the job done. Apple TV might sound a little bit better, actually. And it will give you a lot more other stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. A lovely African antelope-like creature, but that's not the gazelle I'm talking about. The gazelle where you can get cash, cold, hard cash on the barrelhead for that stuff you've stuck in the drawer here, the dusty old smartphones or tablets, even Apple TVs, displays, computers. Gazelle will buy them, and at a good price, GAZELLE.com. You would not stick a $100 bill in a drawer just to gather dust. Well, don't do that with your old smartphone. Go to Gazelle. Get a great quote. The quote's good for 30 days, so there's no requirement that you take advantage of it. You know, after 30 days, it'll expire. But if in the first 30 days, whenever you decide, actually add more stuff. And whenever you get the new thing, get a new phone, this would be a great place to get rid of your old phone. You pull the trigger, check out, and they'll send you a box. You don't even have to pay shipping. They turn it around fast, send you cash. Well, not like cash. They'll send you a check or a PayPal credit. Or get an extra 5%. They will give you Amazon gift cards. If you buy a lot on Amazon, that's a great deal. Gazelle.com. And you see, they will. You can trade in a variety of devices. iPhones, Apple, a BlackBerry, HTC, LG, Motorola, iPads, tablets from Amazon and Asus and Google. And they'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. That's a great thing. Now, you may say, well, what happens to these? Well, the best of the best, they will sell. They have a program called the Gazelle Certified Pre-Owned. So the best stuff that you can buy for a great discount. Now, they have two qualities. There's a certified like new, which is basically new, and certified but much cheaper. And then certified good, which is even better, more affordable. But they might show some gentle signs of wear, you know. It's a great idea. In fact, it's probably in better shape than that iPhone you broke. So it's a great way to save a little extra money, get a great device at a great price. And here's the thing. It's worry-free because all the devices they sell have been put through a rigorous 30-point inspection, so they're fully functional, and you have a 30-day risk-free return policy. So you're really in good shape on this. So to recap, sell at Gazelle, get paid in cash. Buy at Gazelle, get a really good deal. Gazelle, just keep in mind the next time it's time to upgrade, Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's move on. Let's go to Fredonia, New York. Todd's on the line. Hi, Todd.
Hi, Leo. I got a question. I'm going to a conference in a little over a week, and I need a new solution for a wireless keyboard for one of my tablets, and was going to see if you had any suggestions, and then I also, after that, I need a suggestion on maybe a way to get wireless internet while I'm on the road.
You know, Microsoft just released a folding keyboard. Folding keyboards are great because they're really compact. And then they're clamshells. They open up and you get a full-size keyboard. There are a lot of companies that make keyboards. Do you want the keyboard's going to go with an iPad or what?
Well, I've got an iPad Air. I'm sorry, iPad Air 2 that's going to go with. I've also got an Nexus 7, so if it works with that, even better.
So, yeah, so don't get one for the iPad only because it'll be designed to hold an iPad. But there are a number of them that just have a slot that's like a place to lean your to stick your tablet, and they can work with any tablet. All of these are just Bluetooth keyboards anyway, so anything with Bluetooth will work just fine.
And I'm looking for something really lightweight because I walk around a lot. I really want to – like I've got one now. It's just a little heavy. I'd like to get as light as possible.
You know, I don't know what the lightest Bluetooth keyboards are. Chat room, it's up to you now to come through. I've seen so many of them. I like the folding ones because they can get really tiny, but light, I don't know what the lightest ones are. The Wirecutter, I've referred to them before. They're just great. Their favorite Bluetooth keyboard is Logitech's Bluetooth Easy Switch keyboard. See, one thing is you don't want a keyboard that gives up ease of typing for size and weight, right? You want good keys.
Right, yeah.
And the Logitech has great keys. It really feels like a laptop and it has good battery life. Let me see how much, $70. I just don't know. And I would look at this new Microsoft one. I don't know if it's out yet, but they announced at Mobile World Congress a few weeks back, they announced a folding keyboard. Chatroma, do you have anything you prefer? Nobody has any strong recommendation. I really think Logitech is kind of owns this market.
Okay. Yeah. I've got some students and some friends who have the Microsoft Surface, and I really love that keyboard.
I know. Isn't that great?
Like that. Yeah, for the iPad.
Yeah, those the Type keyboard. I wouldn't recommend the other one. There's two of them. The Microsoft Universal Foldable Keyboard is Bluetooth. It's very compact. It is $100 list. But it looks pretty sweet. Actually, this looks like a really good choice. And it will work with everything, anything with Bluetooth. Bluetooth. Ultra-thin, lightweight, says Microsoft. This might be the one. Microsoft actually does fairly good hardware. So, as you say, the Surface is nicely. Let me just see what the weight is. See if they say. They just say lightweight. They don't say what that lightweight would be. But it does look pretty tiny. So, that's one I'd take a look at. Just announced, not yet out. We'll put some links. Raymond Toth in the chat room has put a link to a list of best Bluetooth keyboards. We'll put that in the chat room. I just, off the top of my head, I just don't know what the best one is. I don't use these, but I've always, when I've used them, I've used the Logitech. I've been very happy.
Okay.
All right.
So, and my other question is, I'm one of the few people around who still doesn't have a smartphone. And when I'm at this conference, I'm constantly needing to check the internet. And a lot of times the hotel will have decent stuff. Sometimes the show floor, it's kind of iffy whether or not we can get decent Wi-Fi. I bought an old Wi-Fi several years ago. It was a Virgin Mobile, and I found it really cheap, and it's a sort of pay-as-you-go. Yeah. The problem is with Virgin Mobile, I can't get service anywhere. Every time.
Yeah, they use Sprint, so it has to be somewhere Sprint is strong.
So would you have a suggestion for some sort of pay-as-you-go service like that, other than, say, the Verizon or AT&T or any other devices you could recommend?
You know, there's Freedom Pop, which does the same kind of thing, and they claim to be free. I'm not sure if they're a good solution or not. The problem with conference is if you're using a 4G solution, is everybody else is doing the same.
Yeah.
And our experience has been at every tech conference anyway that we go to is we can't get connectivity. So it's tough. I usually I often use Verizon, but it depends on the city. Where's your conference?
It's Cincinnati, and it's actually the conference is for the United States Institute of Theater Technology. So there's going to be a lot of people.
A lot of geeks. Of geeks.
So
yeah. I love these little MiFi cards. I think they're great technology. You might see if Walmart, you know, they do the straight talk phones. They might have a straight talk Wi-Fi access. Those are usually fairly cheap, often just 3G.
Okay.
Somebody in the chat room says they really like Page Plus. They use the Verizon towers, but they don't do contracts, and they're a low, low price. And I think that's, you know, you're absolutely right not to buy from the big brand names because they're going to charge you the big brand price. But they often resell, as Sprint did through Virgin, at a much lower cost. Right. And so Page Plus sounds like a good one.
Okay, great.
All right. And somebody in the chat room is pointing to our review of the Lapworks Amigo folding keyboard. I think that was one Andy Anatko really liked on our Mac Break Weekly show. It folds not in half but in quarters, so it is tiny. You could put it in your pocket. Lapworks Amigo.
Okay.
And it's a little more pricey, but boy, that thing folds up to nothing. Andy loves little folding keyboards. I don't know why. I mean, I think because he spends a lot of time on Amtrak. A lot of time on the train. Let me see if I can quickly get another call in here. Fred in Long Beach. Got about a minute for you, Fred. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I got one of these devices called a MyCloud. Got it for Christmas. Don't know if I should use it or not. I basically need an external hard drive. Well, let's do it. It says it's 3 terabytes.
Yeah, the idea of the MyCloud is to – it's from Western Digital. It is a hard drive. But it also allows you to plug into your internet and get data into and out of it through the internet. So it's kind of like a Dropbox, but you own the hardware. So yeah, if you have it and you already own it, I think MyClouds are great.
Okay, I got it for Christmas. Didn't really know.
It's a nice gift.
Okay.
It's a nice gift. So you can use it just as an external hard drive, but it really is designed to be used over your network and even over the internet.
Okay, and it'll work fast enough to use it as an external hard drive.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to use it as an external hard drive, I would connect it via the USB port to the computer and use it that way.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, something on the internet said I couldn't do that.
Maybe you can. I don't know that. I'm pretty sure. I would think that in order to get your stuff on there, you'd have to be able to connect it. Why else would they put a USB cable on there?
I think that was to control it or something.
Oh, maybe it is. Maybe. Well, you know, you haven't taken it out of the box, huh?
Right. So I don't know if I should use it or not.
That's a great question. It looks like it does want to be Ethernet particularly, so I'm not sure. Let's see. If anybody knows, put it in the chat room. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I ran out of time. That's the only thing. Let me see if I can. Why I would think you could, if you've got a USB port on it, you could easily back up the files. Just looking at the faster file. Yeah, simply attach a compatible I get it. USB 3 hard drive, that's the expansion port. I get it. It's not for connecting your computer. I think you're right. I don't think you can connect it to the computer, Fred. But gigabit Ethernet, if you know, you have a you have a network at home, right? You have a router?
Right.
Depending on what your computers are capable of, it goes all the way up to a billion bits per second, which is pretty fast. You could copy a gigabyte a minute easily.
Okay.
If your computers and your networks support it. So, okay. But you're right. You cannot. That USB port is for expansion. It is not for
a gigabit per minute. So that would take a long time to do a terabyte.
1,000 minutes.
Yeah.
1,000 minutes. I don't know how long that is. I'd have to do the math.
It's a long time.
You know, if all you want is a big external drive, trade it in, and you could get two terabyte drives for that price, because you're paying a lot for the internet access and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So if all you want is an external drive that you connect to your computer, yeah, I would bring it in and trade it in for a drive, and you'll find, given the price, you should be able to get a couple of drives.
And they'd be a lot faster.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. All right.
Good night.
Bye-bye. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Look who's here, as every week. Dick, you're really actually quite consistent. Very nice to have you. Yeah,
I do think, that. You know, Mad, 50 years, the boating magazine, 42 years.
You've been doing Twit. For how long?
71 years. I don't know how that happened.
The internet, 71 years ago, we were on Telegraph.
Yes, exactly.
So Dick is Mad Magazine's manager. As you heard, 50-plus years at Mad Magazine, but he's also a gadget hound, one of the very first, frankly. You were into gadgets back when answering machines were still a rarity.
When an answering machine was $450 and was about the size of a suitcase.
I remember when the Walkman first came out. That was quite. That was more than that, even. I think it was very expensive.
I was on an airplane, sitting. I upgraded to first, and this guy was sitting next to me. And I said, what is that?" And he said, "Here, listen." And I said, "Oh, where can I buy this? He said, "I'm a pilot, and I just came back from Japan."
Wow.
And I searched for that. It took like 6 months before it got here.
But they still make the Walkman, although I don't know what's going on at Sony, because the most recent one, I think, is over $2,000.
It is.
Aren't things supposed to get less expensive?
Yes. You know, it uses that new, you would know, that new audio format.
Yeah, it plays back high-res music. But
yeah, exactly.
That doesn't mean it should cost $2,000. In fact, yeah. I just reviewed a unit that you would like that plays back the same files with the same, and as far as I can tell, the same quality, that's $100.
Oh, is that the triangular yellow one?
No, that's the Pono. That's $400. That's Neil Young's thing.
Okay.
This is from FIO, F-I-I-O. It's called the X1. Now, it doesn't come with earbuds because it's an audiophile, so you'd probably want to use.
So you're going to use your Bose or whatever.
High-end headphones,
you're like,
right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It doesn't come with memory either. You have to buy little SD, micro SD cards, but those aren't expensive.
Okay. No.
So for 128 gigs, it was about $100. So $200 for the player and the memory. And it sounds great, and it's not too. It's a tenth the cost of Sony's, so I don't know.
Wow.
I guess Sony's is pretty. I don't know.
I could put up with ugly to save $1,900.
So what do you got for us today?
Well, you know, 2 weeks ago, I ran down to Florida.
Boy, that must have taken a while.
Yeah. Well, I had that little Io Hawk. And,
you mean the roller skates?
9,000 batteries, to tell you. No, I flew down to Orlando, and I was telling H-Bomb earlier, is that what United does with Orlando is their transcontinental planes come in the morning, and they don't need them again until night. So they let them make one round trip to Orlando. And if you get on those flights and upgrade with miles to first, you get sleeper seats.
Ooh.
And, you know, the 15-inch screen. And it, so
yeah, but the flight's only a couple of hours. You can't really enjoy it.
I know, but why pay the same price
to sit up?
A regular. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did that in both directions.
So what'd you go see? What was the show?
World Pet Expo, Pet Gadgets.
Wow, they have a show just for pet gadgets.
A big show. I mean, a lot of it is food. Guess who's making pet food?
Who?
Paula Deen.
Oh, good. Does it have butter in it?
I have no idea.
You know what? I would bet that would be very good, actually.
Yeah, I bet it would. Fairway loves anything with butter on it.
More butter for the doggy.
But I found a very bizarre pet cam. Now, a couple weeks ago, right after CES, we talked about Pet Cube, where you could not only see your pet, but you could operate a little laser dot so that wherever you are, you could have your dog, a cat, or a puppy running around the room chasing a laser dot that you would control.
Yeah, you'd be at work, but you'd be playing with your dog at home, which is
exactly
cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now we have Pet Chats. PetChatz. So you've heard of Meet and Greet. This is the first ever Greet and Treat. Okay.
What?
So listen to this.
All right.
Yeah, I know. So you install it in an outlet down around the baseboard.
Yeah.
It has a built-in color camera.
Yeah.
It has a built-in color monitor. So when you call your pet,
wait a minute, you're Skyping Fido?
You're Skyping Fido. Then you can push a button and give Fido a treat drops out of the bottom. It's at the bottom of the pet chats. But wait.
There's more?
And the woman said, and then there's a little fan and a pad that you put on your pet's favorite scent so that if they don't hear the chime when you call your pet and they're sleeping, they often respond to a scent. So the scent will waft through the house because there's a little fan in this unit.
Oh,
and then
please.
When the pet, I know. And then it has a two-way microphone. I said, what if your dog refuses to talk to you? They said, well, that's the dog. You have to take that up with your dog.
That's on the dog now.
That's on the dog, not on us.
What the heck?
Has actually been in the works for a long time. I remember I said to the woman, I said, did I not see this 2 years ago at a Petcom show? And she said, yeah, she did. It took us a long time to iron out all the bugs and get the hardware going. And she said, it's in the marketplace. We've shipped 500 units. We started shipping in November. And they just went on Amazon. It's doing okay on Amazon. I think they had 26 reviews, and it was like 3.5 stars out of 5.
It probably depends on the dog. I don't know if Ozzy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if your dog is camera shy, they're not going to come over, or they could come over with a mask on.
What software does it use on the owner's side?
I do not know. You can access it through the app.
I guess you have to use their Pet Chats app.
You have to use their app to go to it. Or you can go to petchats.com if you're on a computer and go through their website to get to it. And it's also more expensive than all the others at $349.
That's the Amazon price. That's, you know, for what you're getting, that ain't
you
bad.
Know, exactly, because other pet cams do not have a built-in TV set for your dog.
So they don't have a treat shoot.
No, I don't have a treat
shoot. I would pay $350 for the treat shoot alone.
Yeah. You open your Time Warner bill, and you find out that your dog's been watching HBO on their pet chats.
He can't figure it out. He's getting Netflix.
Yeah. Well, no, when you look down the list of movies, and they're all Lassie, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, you go, wait.
Wow.
Wait wow. a minute. Fairway, get in. Yeah.
I feel very lucky because we can bring Ozzy to work. You're at work, and of course, Fairway
I'm at
lives
work,
with
yes.
you, Greg.
Fairway, but, exactly. Fairway but, can roam in and out.
But Ozzy likes coming to work, and so he's very rarely at home alone. But I could see if you couldn't bring your dog to work or you travel a lot, this would be nice to have for
No, there's your a pet. Few of the people on Amazon said, my God, to be able to see my dog and my doggy run over and give my dog a treat and then he runs
I wouldn't want
the
to
room.
See my doggy run over. Oh, or run over to it. Oh, okay. Oh, my God. I just
got to be very careful the way you talk around here. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Leo's very literal minded. You understand?
That's
pet
true.
Chats with a Z.
With a Z.
Greet and treat video phone. I bet you, I don't know why, but I feel like we love our pets. We're very devoted to our pets. This is a huge market now, is in high-tech pet paraphernalia.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There were, and also bizarre gadgets.
Yeah.
There was one. It was a pillow, and I don't have it here, or I'd play What the Heck Is It? So it's a little round pillow,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I said to the woman, what is it? Is this like a life jacket for a dog? And she said, no, it's called Puppy Bumper.
Puppy Bumper.
The Puppy Bumper.
Is it a rubber baby puppy bumper?
It could be, but I think...
What do you put it on the puppy so it doesn't hurt itself?
You put it on the puppy because if you have a little dog and it can go through the fence.
Oh, this keeps it from getting out the doggy door.
Yes,
the dog is too fat to escape.
Or if you have a terrace with a fence and the dog is small enough to go through the fence, the
you
little
just see the dog stuck.
The puppy
in the fence
bumper going
with the puppy right. bumper on. Oh my, that's just. Amazing. Yeah. That's just amazing. Dick D. Bartolo, go to gizwiz.biz. That's where you can play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Thank you, Dickie D. We'll see you next week. Thank you, everybody. Heather Hammond, our phone ranger. Nathan Staten, our musical director. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. All the answers to all the questions are there. And if they're not, well, would you add it, your answer? Because that's what the comments are there for. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week! Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.